The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Okay. All right. Welcome to the show. Nicole Sandler here with you at NicoleSandler.com, Progressive Voices Network, all kinds of things like that. And I've just been told that our regular audio stream is not working. So I need to fix that. Bear with me for a moment. Because, you know, I love the multitasking. We can do that. Control-Alt-Delete. Let's see. Winamp is not responding. Close the program. Sorry, you know, these are the things that normally a producer would deal with, but since I am a one-woman show here, I get to do it all myself. So give me just one second. Let me reboot the audio stream. I know our newest affiliate, Verdant Square Radio, actually takes the stream from this what's not working right now. So hold on. There we go. It should be working now, David. All right. So hopefully we are streaming. Yes, we should be streaming there now. Anyway, welcome to what day is today? Wednesday. You know, it's hard because the days all run together when you stay at home and, you know, not much changes day to day. What is different this week is the convention is in full swing, sort of, such as it is. And actually, many people, and I think I'm among them, think it's better this way. Because honestly, political conventions, unless you're there and you're part of the excitement in the room, they're kind of, what's the technical term, like a clusterfuck to watch? For instance, the roll call that happened last night, usually not real fun to watch. But last night it was, because we went to each state and territory, all 57 of them, and got to sort of travel vicariously through this virtual world that so many of us are living in right now. So it was good. They were, the messages were short and sweet, and they got through it in under an hour, and it worked. It actually worked. And I'd say that's a better way to do the roll calls than inside the arena where people are wearing stupid convention hats and doing goofy things, you know, things that they wouldn't normally do in their regular lives, but they're at a convention, so they think it's okay. Anyway, the other part of it that's interesting is that the speeches themselves are pared down. They're shorter. They're less cumbersome. I mean, Bill Clinton spoke for, I think it was under 10 minutes last night. That's a record for him because he's kind of verbose, in case you hadn't noticed. But, you know, short and sweet and keep the thing moving. You know, they're talking about the reason. What they're doing is the convention itself. And it's all made for TV. This is a television production. That's what the end result is. It's not about panels or speeches. It's about putting on a one-hour TV production. What they're doing is supplying 2 hours worth of programming each night. The cable channels are allegedly taking the 2 hours from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern and running with it. The broadcast networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, and PBS, I believe, are taking a one-hour version, the 10 o'clock hour, and that's it. And what I understand is the reason that they're not willing to carry the 2 hours start to finish is because they're nervous about what next week will bring. They're not so much nervous about what the Democrats are putting out, because we are seeing it. I mean, it's acceptable, depending on your point of view. But next week, when it's the Republican convention, they're really worried that it's going to be a bunch of batshit crazy stuff that they don't want to feel compelled to have to carry gavel to gavel. For instance, you know who some of their confirmed speakers are? Yeah. Well, the couple in, was it in Kentucky that were that turned their shotguns on peaceful protesters? These people are being celebrated with a speaking role at the convention. And then the kid from Covington, Kentucky, who sued over, I don't even remember what it was. Insane. They are celebrating the insane, much the same way, you know, that Donald Trump celebrates the QAnon morons who have won these congressional elections. You know, yesterday was a primary day here in Florida, where I live, and a nut job won the Republican nomination for the congressional race in the district next door. I live in Florida's 22nd district. This is in the 21st, where Lois Frankel is the member of Congress, and she'll win again. This woman whose name I can't, oh God, what's her name? The crazy woman who won. I'm sorry. I really don't spend a lot of time on these crazy people. I just don't. But one of my Twitter buddies, Twin Mom Sue, who lives in Illinois, tweeted me first thing this morning about this woman who won in her primary. And it's like, Nicole, we left you in charge of Florida. I'm like, I don't know anything about these people. This woman is a nut. She is, let's see, what is her name? Laura Loomer. That's who it is. And she's like a QAnon nut job, anti-Muslim person. And, you know, look, she may have won the Republican primary in Florida's 21st district. She got fewer votes as the winner in her primary than Jen Pearlman did. Jen Pearlman is the one who ran against Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And unfortunately, she was soundly defeated, as sadly I knew she would be, because Debbie's got the name recognition, got the money, got the machine behind her, and Jen was a first-time candidate. But Jen got something like, you know, 27% of the vote, which is pretty big against, you know, a force like Debbie Wasserman Schultz. You know, so that's a pretty good showing. She got more votes in her 27% running against Debbie Wasserman Schultz than this Loomer person did winning her primary. So, you know, I ignore those people because they have no bearing on what I do, what I think, what I feel. Thankfully, she will not be an issue come November 3rd. I wish I could say the same thing about Donald Trump. I don't trust him, nor should you, or the Republicans. So with everything that's going on, obviously we've got our work cut out for us. We've got, it's an interesting show for you today. We're going to do a lot of convention recapping. I've got a lot of news to cover. The phone lines are open, 954-889-6410. If you're on Skype, you can Skype to me at Nicole Sandler. Just remember, I work without a producer. So, you know, I take the calls when they come in. So if your timing is good, you know, we may talk. All right. Later on in the program, we're actually going to speak with a veteran. And this is a gentleman who I've not met before, but I'm looking forward to speaking with him. And actually, I was introduced to him on the Twitters yesterday by our pal Got a Laugh, who was tweeting back and forth about the fact that veterans are not getting their prescription meds because of this slowdown, this sabotage of the United States Postal Service. And so let me find his name for you. His name is... I should print out these pages because it would make my life easier, because I go scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. But, you know, I don't want to kill trees. So bear with me. Anyway, his name is Lieutenant Commander Keeley. He's retired Navy, Greg Keeley. And what he said is, I'm a veteran, PTSD and TBI meds, 12 days late and counting. I know dozens of vets in the same boat. Lots of my shipmates are in much worse situations than me. It's literally life and death. This is what the Democrats should be screaming about today. So we'll speak with Greg Keely a little later in the hour and find out how the president's vendetta against the post office, simply because he doesn't want you and me voting by mail, is affecting lives of people who need their meds, who get them by mail and are not getting them now. Yeah, there's so much wrong here. So much wrong. And, you know, we'll get to a lot of it today. But I, you know, I like to start with something funny. I've got a few, and this one, I'm there's a new one from Founder Singh, but I got to be honest with you, I don't love it. I love when they do song parodies, and their new one is like an original song that it's okay. It's not haha funny. So I went searching for more creative ones. Not that Founder Singh aren't creative. They are, but I'm a tough audience. I'm a really tough crowd. So anyway, I found this woman. Her name is Lisa Lee, I believe, or Lisa Lai, L-I. And here she's covering, a song that you'll know. Again, she's new at this. I love the amateur stuff because it's like the homegrown talent. So here we go. Something to give us a giggle before we start getting angry. on the Nicole Sandler Show on the Progressive Voices Network. Here we go.
I've never seen a virus in the flesh. I get my news from presidential briefing. When Fauci talks, I get depressed. But they kicked him out. No more science preaching. But everybody's like, it's been 10 weeks getting border shut down. Let's just chill and open up the bars now. We don't care. The cases are going down in our dreams. Everybody's like, it's too hard to keep ourselves at home. It seems this COVID stuff is overblown, so we don't care. We're having gatherings everywhere, and we'll probably get COVID. People make a big fuss. These stupid masks just ain't for us. Who knows if we should really trust all those boring doctors. They're always saying bad things, but everything. Our igloo neighbors in the north won't let us in, they say, speak too moistly. And I heard that now in China they're doing fine. Well, I think they're lying, 'cause everybody's like, we're the land of freedom, we're the best. It takes up to 2 weeks to get a test back. We don't care. The states be like, look, these poor big businesses are dying. Sorry, old folks, we gotta go save the economy and make the stock markets great again. And we're gonna have COVID. And people make a big fuss. The stupid masks just ain't for us. The temperature is going up. I need a ventilator. And here, health care ain't cheap, but everything's fine. Finally in the lead. Oh, 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 life is great without a care. Just wanna party up everywhere, and we'll always have COVID. Opening up our schools, the kids just gotta follow rules. They won't have symptoms, so it's cool. Don't wanna worry about teachers and all the kids' families. You said Everything's fine.
It's fine. It's fine.
Let me live that fantasy.
Lee, I believe is her name, with her take on Lords, Royals will always have COVID. Kind of sad. And she's talented. It was good. It was a good parody song, but some of them are kind of tragic, aren't they? As we get months and months and months into this thing. Always looking for the humor in it. All right. Well, there's a lot of news to get to today, so why don't we get to some of it? Shall we?
I read the news today, oh boy.
All right. We are going to get to all of the convention stuff, but let me start with the non-conventional stuff. Actually, let me begin with news that broke in the last few hours. Something we learned today, the Supreme Court will hear Obamacare arguments on November 10th, 1 week after the presidential elections. Per their online docket, the Supreme Court will hear the Trump administration's challenge to what's left of Obamacare, because despite what he says, and you know what he does, he lies, 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 lies.
Lies, 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 yeah.
Yeah, despite all of his lies, he's still trying to overturn what is left of the Affordable Care Act, because in the middle of a global pandemic, Donald Trump does not want you to be able to get health care. The whole post office thing has blown up in the last few days, and the House Republicans apparently had a conference call this afternoon. I haven't gotten any reports on it. It was set for 3:45 this afternoon to discuss the vote that the Democrats are putting up this weekend. Yep, Nancy Pelosi called everyone back. There's a vote on Saturday. The bill that they're going to vote on provides $25 billion for mail service and stops further changes to the postal service. Now, let me find, hold on, because there was something about this, another news story today, in which Louis DeJoy said that he was going to stop. That he was immediately halting all the changes he'd been implementing at the Postal Service. You know, changes like removing those blue mail collection boxes from the streets and trashing mail sorting machines that we've gotten reports are being dismantled today in Michigan, of all places. That he's going to stop all of this action until after the November elections. That's what he said. But all day long, reports were still, people were posting on Twitter about the sorting machines still being dismantled and mailboxes still being removed from the streets. So while all that's going on, Nancy Pelosi then said that she spoke with DeJoy today. Let me see if I can find here. Pelosi said that DeJoy told her that he will not restore the sorting machines and the mailboxes that had already been removed, that he would just stop any further destruction of our postal service until after the election. So here, Pelosi said, quote, "The Postmaster General frankly admitted that he had no intention of replacing the sorting machines, blue mailboxes, and other key mail infrastructure that have been removed, and that plans for adequate overtime are not in the works." So the House on Saturday will have this vote. And what's in it, in the bill that they're going to vote on, is, again, $25 billion for mail service. Let's see. And it stops any further changes. Apparently, we've heard that the Republicans are going to whip against the bill. So less than 3 months from Election Day, Republicans will actively whip their caucus members to vote against funding the United States Postal Service. And just to be clear, reaching a deal on this, this has nothing to do with the stimulus spending, with COVID relief. This is only about the post office. On the other stuff, they're still worlds apart. Republicans are at here. There's the gap is on state and local funding. The Democrats want money because cities and states are hurting right now. Democrats want nearly $900 billion for local government funding. Republicans say, yeah, $150 to $250 billion. That's a huge gap to fill. There's also a huge gap on schools, where Democrats are at about $400 billion and Republicans, $105. Other issues include food aid and rental eviction laws. So they are far from anywhere near a solution to the standoff. And who's suffering? Not them. The members of Congress, they're all doing just fine. Thank you very much. So Trump, I guess today, decided he doesn't need to win Ohio. Did you hear about this? The president tweeted this morning to his supporters not to buy Goodyear tires. Here's the tweet. Don't buy Goodyear tires. They announced a ban on MAGA hats. Get better tires for far less. This is what the radical left Democrats do. Two can play the same game, and we have to start playing it now. If you're wondering what this was about, apparently, Goodyear, who based in Ohio, employs 65,000 Ohioans, it has a policy of no political wear, no political gear in the workplace. That makes sense. So apparently they had a presentation, and they said Black Lives Matter logo is fine, but you cannot, let me see if I hear. Okay. They announced here, an employee posted a slide that the person said was from a company training session. The slide listed as acceptable Black Lives Matter and lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender pride. Those kind of things are okay. Sorry, my mouth and brain are not working together today. Unacceptable are things such as Blue Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, MAGA attire, and any political affiliated slogans or material. So Trump was asked about this. Kayleigh McEnany was asked about it at her lying session today. And you know, she's like, well, they didn't explicitly say that. And, you know, if they can't wear Blue Lives Matter stuff, that, you know, it's just all nonsense. You can't wear a Biden hat. You can't wear a MAGA hat. So Donald Trump is telling his followers to boycott Goodyear. Keep it up, Donald. Keep going. This is how we will win. It's just unbelievable. 65,000 employees in Ohio. Amazing. All right. So the person who took the picture was at the Topeka plant and who provided it to a TV station. In other non-conventional news, ICE, Customs and Border Patrol, I guess, is feeding Muslim detainees pork at its Chrome Detention Center in Miami. And its chaplain, when asked about it, said, quote, "It is what it is." The chaplain, this is a religious person. This is a priest or some kind of alleged Christian who is violating the civil rights of these people. Muslims do not eat pork. Jews who are practicing Jews do not eat pork. A religious leader, a chaplain of a facility, should know that. But regarding this basic deliberate violation of these prisoners' dignity, he says it is what it is. They're giving them pork. You know, it is opposite world. It just is opposite world, where not one damn thing makes sense. All right, let's get to the convention. Oh, you know what? There's one other non-conventional story. Duh, the big news of the day that I didn't get to, that I need to hit on. And I got to tell you, I reached out to Marcy Wheeler today. Marcy Wheeler, who blogs at emptywheel.net, is one of my favorite journalists on national security issues. All the Russia stuff, all the Mueller report stuff, she is able to take it all in and then spit it back out in a way that, you know, even people like me can understand. Not saying I don't understand complex situations, but this report that was issued yesterday by the Senate Intelligence Committee, it was the fifth and final report on Russian election interference. It was close to 1,000 pages, like 966 pages or something along those lines. And that's why I was reading Marcy Wheeler's take on it rather than trying to navigate my way through it when, you know, I get road weary reading dry stuff like that. Anyway, this report, a bipartisan report, remember the Senate is run by Republicans, and Marco Rubio now leads the Intelligence Committee because Burr had to recuse himself because he's got some, you know, financial conflicts. Yeah. Yeah. Insider stuff. Anyway, so we could call it the Rubio report, I suppose, because it came out of his committee. And this report, the Rubio report, we'll call it, clearly shows that there was Russian interference in the 2016 elections, and also shows how the Trump campaign welcomed a foreign adversary's help, going much further than the Mueller report. So at the New York Times, Mark Mazzetti and Nicholas Fandos wrote that, quote, it laid out an extensive web of contacts between Trump campaign advisors and Russian government officials and other Russians, including some with ties to the country's intelligence service. Ooh, how about that? So here are three main takeaways. And again, I reached out to Marcy Wheeler. She just moved to Ireland from Michigan, of all places. So she was not available to join us today. I'm hoping it probably won't happen this week because she's in moving hell, but maybe early next week she can kind of bring us up to speed on everything that the report tells us. And the other part about it that I want to know is, what are the Democrats going to do now? Because what this report shows is pretty stunning. For instance, number one, the report tells us that then Trump campaign manager, or sorry, campaign chairman Paul Manafort was working with a Russian intelligence officer and sought to share internal campaign information with Konstantin Kilimnik. The committee says it obtained, quote, some information suggesting that Kilimnik may have been connected to Russia's 2016 hacking operation. And it concludes that Manafort's role on the campaign, quote, represented a grave counterintelligence threat. Paul Manafort, who's currently incarcerated, well, now he's at home serving out his sentence because of the COVID. But this report from the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence says that Paul Manafort represented a grave counterintelligence threat. But that's not all. The report also tells us that Trump and senior campaign officials sought to obtain advance information on WikiLeaks email dumps through Roger Stone, and that Trump himself spoke to Roger Stone about WikiLeaks, despite telling Mueller's office, the special counsel, in his written testimony that he had, quote, no recollections that they had spoken about it. If I need to shine a spotlight on this, Donald Trump lied to the special counsel's office, to Robert Mueller's office, in his written answers. We now have proof. It's in writing from the Marco Rubio report. And wait, there's more. Another major takeaway. That information offered at that June 2016 Trump Tower meeting, remember that, with Russians and Donald Trump Jr. and Jared Kushner and Paul Manafort? Well, this meeting, quote, was part of a broader influence operation from the Russian government. Two of the Russians who met with the Trump crew had, quote, significant connections to the Russian government, including Russian intelligence and Russian lawyer Natalia Veselnitskaya's lies were, quote, far more extensive and concerning than what had been publicly known. Again, this is scratching the surface of an almost 1,000-page report, the fifth and final report from the Select Senate Committee on Intelligence that dealt with this issue. And again, it was a bipartisan committee who issued this. So where's Marco Rubio? I want to ask him questions about this. You would think he's my senator. I should be able to ask him, but yeah, that ain't happening. So anyway, that's this is looming in the background while we're playing, you know, political convention, rah-rah Joe Biden. Now, I'm all for, and so we'll get it back into this in the next few days is when I can get more information on it to share with you. But you need to know that there is this major story brewing out there. And again, the big question that I ask is, what are the Democrats going to do about it? I think they should impeach the motherfucker again right now. Pull him back in. File articles of impeachment and do it now. Damn it. Do it and do it live. Sorry, I get carried away sometimes. But that's what they should do. Doesn't mean they will, because, again, this Democratic Party, I'm trying. Now, I told you I did, at the behest of now my late friend, Mitchell Stolberg, who passed away last month, I became a Broward County precinct committee woman. I'm not quite sure what that entails, except that I'm going to be pushing the Democratic Party to the left. And that's what we need, because frankly, I'm sick and tired of the Democratic Party being run by conservadems. It's the only way I can put it. And this, I guess, will bring us into our convention coverage. So it is official. Joe Biden is the Democratic nominee for president as night two of the Democratic National Convention took care of the formalities with an interesting and well-received roll call. We'll get to that in a moment. But the night two, Tuesday night, served to officially nominate Joe Biden as the Democratic nominee for the presidency. So to open the night, there was a montage of what they're calling 17 newly elected Democrats. They were a group of state representatives and senators, Congress members who were just elected, mayors, even Florida's agricultural commissioner, because she's the only Democrat in the state executive branch. All explaining, edited together very cleverly and nicely why they ran and why Joe Biden should be our 46th president. So I don't have a whole lot of this keynote put together. It was creative. This was my favorite part of it, though.
He'll bring down the cost of health care and prescription drugs, too, giving tax credits to working families and allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices.
That's a big effing deal.
That's a big effing deal.
Okay, get it? Because Joe Biden, when they passed Obamacare, whispered to Barack, this is a big fucking deal. But the Democratic Party couldn't use the word fucking, so effing. And they had these 17 who they're calling newly elected young leaders, except they weren't. They didn't have any of the squad in that group. And it ended with Stacey Abrams with 2 minutes, and they're putting her in that category. And Stacey Abrams actually didn't win her election in 2018. But, you know, it's okay, I guess. Look, they're being creative, and I appreciate the creativity. Following this unusual keynote address, the first speaker was former Acting Attorney General Sally Yates. Now, she was in office when the Trump team came in at the transition, and she was fired because she refused to defend Trump's bullshit Muslim ban. And she opened by talking about the unlikelihood of her ever speaking at a political convention.
Good evening. I'm Sally Yates. Speaking at a political convention is something I never expected to be doing, but the future of our democracy is at stake. I served as Deputy Attorney General in the Obama-Biden administration, and stayed on as acting attorney general for the Trump transition. Then, 10 days in, I was fired for refusing to defend President Trump's shameful and unlawful Muslim travel ban. That was the start of his relentless attacks on our democratic institutions and countless dedicated public servants.
So Sally Yates, good speaker. Okay, I'm glad she spoke. That was good. The night, though, relied heavily on the past. And I find this curious because this Democratic Party needs to start bringing in young people. Really. Bernie Sanders did, although they still didn't come out and vote. But at least he has young people involved. But for the fact that Obama was looking forward, we're not looking back. Last night looked back. So former president and former first lady Jimmy and Rosalynn Carter spoke. That was nice. They gave remarks and said, we've known and admired Joe and Jill for many years. Joe knows too well the sorrows and struggles of being a family caregiver. It was nice to hear from them. They're good, decent people. And then Bill Clinton spoke. And although he has spoken at every Democratic convention since 1980, part of me wonders, is he the right messenger to speak to this audience in the era of Me Too? You know what? He wasn't overly offensive last night, but I do know that his presence offended some.
When asked about the surge in deaths, he shrugged and said, it is what it is. But did it have to be this way? No. COVID hit us much harder than it had to. We have just 4% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's COVID cases. Our unemployment rate is more than twice as high as South Korea's, 2.5 times the United Kingdom's, more than 3 times Japan's.
Yeah.
Donald Trump says we're leading the world. Well, we are the only major industrial economy to have its unemployment rate tripled.
Yeah, we are. Following Bill Clinton, we heard from, former Secretary of State under Obama and Biden, John Kerry, a failed Democratic presidential nominee. But also, so did former Secretary of State under George W. Bush, Colin Powell, appears. More Republicans jumped on the virtual convention floor to pledge their support for Democrats in the race. I get that I'm not the target audience for this convention. I hated the fact that so many Republicans were giving speaking slots. Now, all right. So then they get to the point where they've got to come up on the roll call and the official nomination of Joe Biden. And there was another major diss, I would say. We talked earlier in the week of the fact that AOC was going to speak, but she was only given a minute. What we didn't know was what role she was assigned, and that is to second the nomination of Bernie Sanders. So what happened was, because this is convention procedure, DNC Chair Tom Perez introduced 2 speakers to nominate Bernie and 3 to nominate Joe Biden. To nominate Bernie was Bob King. He's the former president of the United Auto Workers Union. And then the role of seconding Bernie's nomination was given to AOC. And for what she was tasked to do, she did it brilliantly. We talked earlier in the week about her minute. She talked about how she was going to use that minute, and she used it beautifully, and actually she used more than a minute, was closer to a minute 40. And here is AOC delivering that, statement, which is, I guess, what we call it.
Good evening, bienvenidos, and thank you to everyone here today endeavoring towards a better, more just future for our country and our world. In fidelity and gratitude to a mass people's movement working to establish 21st century social, economic, and human rights, including guaranteed health care, higher education, living wages, and labor rights for all people in the United States. A movement striving to recognize and repair the wounds of racial injustice, colonization, misogyny, and homophobia, and to propose and build reimagined systems of immigration and foreign policy that turn away from the violence and xenophobia of our past. a movement that realizes the unsustainable brutality of an economy that rewards explosive inequalities of wealth for the few at the expense of long-term stability for the many, and who organized a historic grassroots campaign to reclaim our democracy. In a time when millions of people in the United States are looking for deep, systemic solutions to our crises of mass evictions, unemployment, and lack of health care, in el espíritu del pueblo and out of a love for all people, I hereby second the nomination of Senator Bernard Sanders of Vermont for President of the United States of America.
Good for you, AOC. She did what she needed to do. But whoever runs the Twitter account for NBC News decided to position it thusly. They tweeted out, in one of the shortest speeches of the DNC, Representative Ocasio-Cortez did not endorse Joe Biden. You know what that is?
Bullshit.
This is, and AOC finally tweeted out, this is completely unacceptable, disappointing, and appalling. She said, the DNC shared the procedural purpose of my remarks to media well in advance. NBC News knew what was going to happen and that it was routine. She continued, yet you waited several hours to correct your obvious and blatantly misleading tweet. It sparked an enormous amount of hatred and vitriol, and now the misinformation you created is circulating on other networks, all to generate hate clicks from a pre-recorded routine procedural motion. It is stunning and it's disgusting. And NBC then said they deleted the tweet, but you know what they didn't do? They didn't apologize to her. And then she also, she tweeted again today saying to her followers, if you are confused, no worries. Convention rules require roll call and nominations for every candidate that passes the delegate threshold. I was asked to second the nomination for Senator Sanders for roll call. I extend my deepest congratulations to Joe Biden. Let's go win in November. And I'll tell you what, I will spare you the ugliness of some of the comments directed at her, ostensibly from fellow Democrats. It's just shameful, absolutely shameful. But it went on, and they did the roll call, and the final vote came to 2,687 votes for Joe Biden, 1,073 for Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden's nominee. Woohoo! They had a, you know, the roll call was fun. It was, I enjoyed it. It was good. And then they had a virtual graphic computer-generated balloon drop. And then they showed Joe Biden and Jill in a room dancing to Kool and the Gang's Celebration. It was kind of surreal, but, you know, to use a phrase, it is what it is. And then the evening ended with Dr. Jill Biden, who told the emotional backstory of how she fell in love with a man and his two young boys who had just endured unimaginable loss when Joe Biden's first wife and daughter were killed in a car accident that also put the other two in the hospital, and it proved that we'll once again have a first lady of whom the country can be truly proud. I like Jill Biden. I think she did great last night. I think she's smart. I think she's a real person. I'll tell you, she's probably the one I'm most comfortable with in this race. So tonight we're going to hear from allegedly Elizabeth Warren, although I'm hearing there's some shaky stuff going on there that she may not be on camera, or I don't know. We'll find out. Nancy Pelosi is going to speak. Hillary Clinton. Again, what we have the last losing nominee. I don't know that we've done that before, but I guess it's just me. Let's see, the governor of Wisconsin, Tony Evers, New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, Kamala Harris, and former President Barack Obama. No word yet on any Republicans. Oh, but the night is young, or the day is young. Anyway, all right. You know what? I have a guest coming up, and I told you about him a few minutes ago. This is somebody I met on Twitter yesterday. He is a, I guess, a friend of Laffy's. So they were talking, such as you do on the Twitter machine, and Greg Keighley was answering Laffy when she tweeted about the really horrible situation that the added effects of the sabotage of the United States Postal Service on Americans. Donald Trump just doesn't want you to vote by mail because he knows he'll have a harder time winning if you do. So he is trying to sabotage the Postal Service. But there are, I would say unintended consequences. With Trump, I don't think anything is unintended. So let's bring in Greg Keighley. Hi, Greg. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Nicole. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So LCDR, I'm guessing, stands for Lieutenant Commander?
Yes, ma'am. It certainly does.
Okay. And you're with U.S. Navy, retired. You're actually the president and co-founder of an organization, and I want to get it right, called, I'm scrolling, the Council on American Security. The website is camsec.org. And tell us about the Council on American Security. What do you guys do? What is this organization?
Yeah, sure. Thank and I appreciate the opportunity. The Council is a group that came together. It's a bipartisan group, you know, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, and interesting, a lot of people that haven't been involved in politics ever. They're all out of the national security arena, military, retired military, intelligence professionals, and that sort of thing. And what folks need to understand is that those people, by law, and rightly so, can't be involved in the political process often, or they're trained not to be.
Right.
So what we've done, you know, we got so sick of Trump disrespecting the military, disrespecting the intelligence services, that a bunch of us got together. We've got everyone from General Wesley Clark, who many of your listeners would be very well aware of.
Sure.
General Honoré.
General Honoré. Katrina. Yeah, yes.
We've got some great folks on the I just called around, and they were all like, yeah, we're in. And we launched the council, and our entire goal is to just bring cogent, respected, respectful leadership back to the White House as far as national security is concerned. Because right now, America is so lowly thought of on the global stage and within the military itself that we have to affect change.
Absolutely. So this organization's fairly new.
Yes, ma'am. We've been working behind the scenes for probably 5 or 6 months, but we only officially launched about a month ago.
Oh, wow.
And, we wanted to have all our ducks in a row. You know, we spent 20 years in the military. Everything has to be exactly right.
Sure.
And we launched, and, we're spreading the message through shows like yours. We've been on Morning Joe a bunch, and op-eds, and just getting the message out there. And we're really focusing on some of these swing states which are military heavy, like Florida and North Carolina and
sure,
Virginia.
Sure.
Because if Trump gets another 4 years, the consequences for this country are just not worth thinking about.
Oh, I agree. And I'll tell you something, it's kind of heartening to see, especially since the travesty at Lafayette Square for Trump's Bible photo op, some military leaders finally coming forward and saying, that was a mistake. I honestly didn't know that's what he was doing, and I object to the way he's doing what he's doing. And I think it was that incident that finally got some military leaders, past and current, to say, we're not in this game. This is not us. And it makes me feel better. It makes me feel like if he does what so many of us are afraid he's going to do and refuse to leave come January 20th, that the military will not allow that to happen. I'm hoping, I'm projecting here, but it sounds like you believe that too.
Yeah, I think so. And look, Nicole, I think if you look at, if heaven forbid that actually happened and he barricaded himself in the White House, the only institution that the public writ large would trust to rectify the situation is the military.
Yes.
I mean, until Trump came in, the military are the most respected institution in America by a long way. Trump has politicized them. He's belittled them. He's used them as pawns in political propaganda. And that, I've been what I call the same conservative my whole life. But, at some point, you just have to realize that the damage he's doing, you know, it's country before party, and that's what most of our folks believe. And you raised the Lafayette Square issue. We have Adam DeMarco, Major Adam DeMarco, who was the whistleblower from Lafayette Square that testified. He's one of our board members.
Nice.
And Adam's been very active in getting the message out. And the Lafayette Square debacle was probably the crux for many of our members that came to us immediately after, and Adam joined us immediately after that. And that really got the message out for us, because for many people, they sat there, and then that was the tipping point. They're like, that's not how
and it should have been for many people. I mean, they were peaceful protesters, and they were tear gassed by the military. I mean, it's a head-exploding moment. Greg, before we move on and get to the reason why you're here today, I got to say, you don't sound like a typical American Navy man. There's a bit of an Aussie accent there. Yes?
What? Yes, there is. I spent 10 years in the Royal Australian Navy before coming over to the U.S., was recruited into the U.S. Navy, and done between active and reserve about 10 years here as well before retiring last year. And, yeah, it's been great. It's different cultures and everything, but it's been quite the experience.
That it is, and I'm sure it has. Now, we became acquainted because you got into a Twitter chat with our friend Got a Laugh last night. She posted a story from CNN that reported, quote, "The Department of Veteran Affairs has been forced to find alternative ways to ship mail order prescriptions for patients whose medication is delivered by the U.S. Postal Service, including FedEx and UPS. So Laffy tweeted it out. You responded to her, and you said, I'm a veteran, PTSD, and TBI meds 12 days late and counting. I know dozens of vets in the same boat. Lots of my shipmates are in much worse situations than me. It's literally life and death." Okay, so now he's endangering our veterans. He's endangering American citizens by his petty game, because he doesn't want you and me to be able to vote by mail because he thinks he'll lose. He should lose. But how can he?
He should.
This is just astounding. So you're personally impacted by this. And it's 12 days late already? So this has been going on longer than we know.
Yeah, it's 13 days as of today. But, you know, I think this has blown up on them in ways they didn't expect. I think they went to war with the Postal Service expecting they might be able to delay the mail, you know, delegitimize the election, whatever. But then this has happened, and there's, you know, and I've just got to read this so I get the facts right. 80% of veterans get their prescriptions by mail, which I didn't realize until I started looking into this. That translates to 120 million prescriptions a year going out to veterans by mail, which is daily 330,000 prescriptions delivered by the mail. Now, I'm not in a, you know, there's a people that have much, much, much worse situation than me. You think if you're on heart medication, you have high blood pressure, any of those sort of things, this literally could be life and death, because those meds turn up and you can't go to the VA to pick them up because of COVID. All the non-essential services are closed.
Right.
So you are relying 100% on the mail to get your medications right now.
It is astounding. And it's not only that. It's people, you know, seniors who get their Social Security checks in the mail.
Of course.
It's the U.S. Postal Service. It's in the Constitution. And he's doing that. It's just astounding. So, you know, Greg Keeley is with us. Again, he is a retired Navy man who is the head of president and co-founder of the Council on American Security. You can find them at CAMSEC.org. And a lot of military people, and police as well, tend to be Republicans. You said, as we started talking, you've always been a conservative. Were you a Republican before Trump?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And well, not anymore.
Wow. So are you finding, I know, look, police, the New York City Police Union, the Police Benevolent Association, endorsed Trump, which I don't understand. I
didn't get that either.
I don't get it. But you're saying that the attitudes in the military now are finally, people are fed up with this, because you even mentioned around the world we're looked down upon now. We do not have the same standing as we did in the world 3.5 years ago, do we?
Right. No, and that's a shame. I mean, you know, veterans and the military, as you point out, are an important constituency for the president, right, for President Trump and Republicans writ large. And they broadly supported him in 2016. But I think what you're seeing now, the worm's turning a little bit. You know, when you get these areas of retiree veterans in Florida, North Carolina, Virginia, and all of a sudden they're seeing all this nonsense going on. You know, it started back when he disparaged John McCain, for goodness sake.
Right.
You know, this has been a long-running thing with Donald Trump. And look, you're still going to get, like you do in society, 30 to 40% of people that are going to, you know, go with him to the grave kind of deal. And, you know, the military is largely reflective of that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's any better or worse necessarily, but I think, you know, our whole goal is if we can just get 1 or 2 percent people to come under, you know, to go, you know what, I can't do this anymore. And, you know, they can go back to voting the Republican ticket next time. But it's just too important. We cannot have Trump in the White House any longer.
Absolutely. What did you think? Did you hear Colin Powell speak last night?
I didn't. I've actually got it on my
DVR
laptop to watch. Uh-huh. But I read some of the excerpts, and, you know, I think one of his quotes was, you know, we need someone we can proudly salute again.
Yeah.
And I think that wraps it up. Colin Powell's an amazing man. And I think he hit the nail right on the head with that.
So let me ask you this, because I'm a progressive Democrat. And so I've bristled a little bit at the parade of Republicans coming through the Democratic convention, such as it is. But is it comforting for you as a former Republican that a lot of your fellow conservatives are saying we can't do that guy again? We need to go with the sensible people.
I think it is, Nicole, in many respects, because look, you think if you're a guy on the fence, you're really not exposed. You know, you watch Fox all day or whatever, and you're not exposed to any other opinion. Once you see a Cindy McCain or a Kasich or you know, a Colin Powell, whoever, come up there and say, you know what, it's okay. This guy's a danger to the country, and you need to step up and serve again and vote against him. I think that gives folks a lot of comfort, knowing that they're not, you know, the only ones thinking that. And I applaud actually the Biden campaign for, you know, that outreach, because I think it will have a significant impact.
Good. Well, I hope you're right, and I need to get over my. my displeasure, because we do need people like you to reject him, because we need sanity restored. And that might be the best slogan out there. Restore sanity.
I might rip that one off, Nicole.
Have it. Go for it. It's all yours. Okay. Greg Keeley, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, what are you doing now? I mean, what are you going to do about the medications? Is there anything you can do? Is there any recourse?
No, I just, went down to CVS and picked up some Tylenol PM and that sort of thing, and I'll just keep on waiting. It's an untenable situation, and they just didn't know the cat they were letting out of the bag with this, and I'm hoping it's going to blow back on them as it should.
Oh, it definitely should. And now the news that they're whipping within the House Republican caucus to vote against funding the vote that's going to happen on Saturday to fund the post office. You know, I say go for it. Just let them keep going. The best thing Joe Biden could do is stay in his basement and be quiet and let.
Oh, I agree 100%. I had this argument with someone the other day. It's like, why does he need? He doesn't have to campaign against
Don't
Trump.
Don't go anywhere.
Trump's campaigning against Trump.
Exactly. Just stay home. Again, I hope people will visit camsec.org. You've got a lot of great information on there, but also ways that people can get involved, and you ask them to share their vote by mail story. It sounds like you're really stepping up to mobilize veterans and military people to do the right thing here.
Great. Thank you, Nicole. And if we can ever do anything for any of your listeners, just tell them to reach out and we'll be happy to help.
You got it. We'll do. Greg Keeley, thank you so much. It was great to meet you. And I hope you're able to get your meds.
Thanks, Nicole. I appreciate it. You'll probably hear me from where you are if I don't.
Well, feel free to reach out anytime you want. I'm here. We'll talk on Twitter. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks so much.
Okay, bye-bye. Wow. The law of unintended consequences, and everything Donald Trump does has consequences. And they're bad. We need to get out from under this mess. All right. With that, we're done. Tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. Thank you for listening, everyone. Keep the faith, stay safe, and vote. See you tomorrow. Bye.